Thank you so very much for that kind introduction. It's a great pleasure to be here with so very many of Ellie's dear friends. At the funeral of Ellie's father in 1960, one of Sir Hersch's greatest contemporaries, Wilfred Jenks, gave a magnificent address, which is printed in full in the British Yearbook of that year, in which he recognized the joy that a son of high promise and early attainment in their mutual field brought to a father. Ellie more than lived up to his great father's demanding expectations. He became an unsurpassed international legal advocate of the 20th century. He was for decades a Cambridge lecturer of extraordinary flair and popularity, a fellow of Trinity College, Cambridge for some 65 years. He supervised law students of Trinity and mentored students of international law throughout Cambridge University. Some of the leading international lawyers of our time were his students. Four of them became president of the International Court of Justice. Three of them are present in this room. Ellie had entrepreneurial flair as well. He founded Grotius Publications, which took over the publication of international law reports, which his father and Lord McNair had founded, as well as many other books in the field. It was ultimately acquired by the Cambridge University Press. And in that enterprise, as in much else, he was mightily helped by his wife, Kathy, who ran the administration of Grotius Publications. Ellie founded, of course, the Cambridge Research Center in International Law, which the then Huell Professor James Crawford renamed the Lauterpacht Center in honor of Hersch and of Ellie, and it remains central to international legal studies at Cambridge. Rosalind Higgins this morning emphasized the singularity of Ellie's career, and that brought to mind a comment that Oscar Schachter made to me years ago, recounting what Hersch had said to him about Ellie's early career when he spent a lot of time in the editing and publication of British Practice in International Law, and where he otherwise was interested in the application more than the theory of international law. And he said to Oscar in a worried sort of way, he may end up no better than Manley Hudson. And Oscar thought that was quite funny because Hudson had an eminent career in the United States as the Bemis Professor at Harvard Law School, as a very long time student of the court. He published, as you may remember, every year in the journal, a commentary on the work of the ICJ for that year. He directed the Harvard Research in International Law, which was a huge enterprise. At any rate, Ellie, in fact, was more of a doer than a scholar. I think that's true, but what a doer he was. His career as a practicing international lawyer par excellence was launched when he was in his 20s. You'll recall that the imperial government of Iran expropriated the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company in 1951. Iranian oil exports were largely suspended, and oil that was shipped was pursued as hot oil. And Ellie acted as counsel for British Petroleum, the renamed Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. Iranian oil returned to international markets after prolonged negotiations between the restored Shah's government, BP, and the other major international oil companies. At the ripe age of 25, Ellie was parachuted into Tehran, where he joined the chief legal counsel of BP and the other majors to work out the terms of the consortium agreement. He was then about 25, while his colleagues were some 30 years older. Ellie not only deftly handled his elements of the negotiations, he enlivened the proceedings. A key element of Ellie's extraordinary professional success was illustrated by the proceedings in Tehran. His charm. Ellie was refreshing. He was vivacious, audacious, endlessly curious, and endlessly entertaining. He was sought after not only because of his legal talents, but because of his exceptionally engaging personality. From 1960, when he first argued before the International Court of Justice, and for some five decades thereafter, Ellie was unsurpassed as an advocate before the court. His early major case was Barcelona Traction. In mid-career, he so impressed the Prime Minister of Australia with his ingenuity and advocacy in the nuclear test cases that he was appointed the chief legal advisor in the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs, which up to that time in matters of international law had been handled by the Attorney General's office. And he served in that newly created position for some 3 years and played an influential part in the Law of the Sea conferences. That Australian interlude interrupted his extended counseling of Chile in his major, in its major dispute with Argentina over the border between them at the Beagle Channel. The cases in which Ellie advised governments and companies were legion. Toward the end of his career as an international advocate, he was a lead counsel in Qatar versus Bahrain, an important boundary dispute whose oral proceedings in the International Court of Justice were broadcast live to thousands of viewers, especially in the Arab world. Ellie was a far-sighted innovator in the field of investor-state arbitration. He played a key role in assisting Lord Shawcross in producing what came to be known as the Abbs-Shawcross Principles on the promotion and protection of foreign investment. He was the inventor or an inventor of what came to be known as the Umbrella Clause because it sheltered foreign investment with the cover of international law. Though Johnny Vida informed me recently that his pal Prosper Vail claimed that he was the inventor of the clause. At any rate, they were very close and exchanged ideas between them. Ellie was a founding member, as was Prosper Vail, of the World Bank Administrative Tribunal in its formative years, and he and Prosper put their stamp on the enduring jurisprudence of that tribunal when they were the principal authors of its first fundamental judgment de Maurat. International law reports, founded by his father and Arnold McNair, and it's worth reading the introduction to the first volume of that series, because Lauterpacht and McNair said that there's much more international law than people are aware of. And it's to be found not only in the judgments of international tribunals, but national tribunals. And they began to gather reports from around the world in which international law played a role in the judgments. We take that for granted now, but it was a significant innovation which Chris Greenwood has carried on with great devotion together with Ellie over the years. Ellie prepared 5 annotated volumes of Hirsch's writings, and the annotations, again, are very interesting to read. And of course, he wrote a fine biography of his father. Ellie's many speeches and articles and his monograph on aspects of the administration of international justice were perceptive contributions to the progressive development of international law. Ellie's attainments were recognized as Queen's Counsel, Bencher of Gray's Inn, a reader and an honorary professor at Cambridge, by his knighthood, and by his receipt of the Hudson Medal and the Hague Prize. These were the highlights of Ellie's extraordinary professional career, but his life was much fuller still. Above all, Ellie enjoyed life. He surmounted its setbacks with sang-froid. He radiated animation. His capacity for love and friendship, his vivacity and generosity were unbounded. For his students and his colleagues, he was a source of unending stimulation and support. He was a source of happiness to his parents, his devoted wives, Judy and Kathy, his 4 children, 2 daughters and 2 sons, and his 8 grandchildren, and his multitude of friends and colleagues, so many of whom are here today. Those who were fortunate enough to know Ellie, those who were fortunate enough to have his light shine upon them, cherish his memory. Thank you.